Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's also Tommy Dreesen's kind of town. Comedy legend Harvey, Illinois' own Tommy Dreesen is returning to Chicago on Saturday, August 28th at the Comedy, the Shrine Theater in Aurora for his one-man show, The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh. For tickets, you can go to ComedyShrine.com. Last year, he released his memoir, and that is called Still Standing, His Journey from Streets and Saloons to the Stage and Sinatra. And you can also hear Tom now and then on the Sinatra Hour, Sunday mornings at 7 to 9, right here on 720 WGN. How you doing, Tommy?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Dave?
I am fabulous. I wasn't even sure where to start talking about today, but you know, let's start with our Cubbies. So, Baez, Bryant, Rizzo, Kimbrell, all gone in a matter of days. Did you go on a bender? Like, how did you get through it?
I survived that till the following day when I found out they traded the Bleacher Bums to Detroit, and they got a beer vendor to the Dodgers for two peanut vendors to be named later. You know, they got rid of everybody.
You know, but there's a point. It's obviously that there's some moves needed to be made to get the team back on top. It was just the most painful 72 hours on the planet for a Cubs fan, anyway.
Yeah, it's purely a business decision, and I understand it. I understand. It's business, you know.
Yeah.
And it reminds you of the movie The Godfather. You know, when they killed you, it wasn't anything personal. It was business, you know.
That's true. Very good point. Very softly spoken. I like that. You know, and
by
you're
the way, when you open with that song, My Kind of Town, nothing used to please me more. In the 14 years I toured with Frank in 45, 60, 50 cities a year, we'd come to Chicago every year, and we'd either do the Rosemont Horizon or the Chicago Theater or the New World Theater or the Erie Crown Theater, it's somewhere. But he would open in Chicago with that song. And it was I would do my show, and they'd take like a little short break, and then Frank would walk out, and he wouldn't, without any introduction, he'd look at the crowd, and he'd go, "This is my kind of town," and they would
That's
just
awesome.
Go crazy.
Well,
it was such a thrill to be with him in my hometown and to watch the reaction that Chicago gave to him, you know.
Well, you know, and what's funny, too, is he always took that song. He took a lot of songs like that, but Chicago, he always changed up a little bit. Like, I almost feel like some of it he made up along the way. He would throw in little quips, different street names, because he knew the city.
Yeah. And he loved it. He once told me, he said, "You know, I work Chicago more than any other city in my career." He said, "A lot of people thought it was New York." He said, "But Chicago is where I work the most." He said, "And I love coming here." And he started naming mayors that I didn't know way before Mayor Daley and you know how they treated him and all that stuff. He loved Chicago, and Chicago loved him.
You had a great story that you've told me before about Sinatra and being on that airplane and flying into the city. That is still one of my favorites. Could you share that one?
Yeah, it's in my book, too, mm-hmm. and by the way, thank you for plugging the book. They can get it at Amazon.com, yep. And you'll have it in 2 days, or you can go to Barnes & Noble. But the book is doing real well, and I'm real proud of it. But the opening of the book is, it's me, I was with Frank 14 years, but when I had been with him 2.5 years, touring all over the country with Frank, we finished in Cincinnati at the Riverfront Arena there, and we were flying into Chicago. You know, we left like Frank did, like the building was on fire. You know, he would leave, and we squad cars and limousines would rush us we'd get in the limo, and they'd rush us to the private jet. And, in moments later, we'd be flying over the venue, and people weren't even in their cars yet, you know.
I love that.
And Frank was saying to me, you know, we're going to Chicago, Tommy. They renovated the Chicago Theater. He said they put $8 million in, renovated it back to its original look. And he said, we're going to knock him dead, Tommy. And all of a sudden, it occurred to me, and I had been touring with him 2.5 years. I was thinking, oh, my God,
yeah.
I'm going back home to the Chicago Theater, where I used to shine shoes in that alley next to the Chicago Theater when I was a little boy. I'm going back to Chicago, to my hometown, and have my name on the marquee with Frank Sinatra. And it became so surreal that I got choked up, and he kept talking. But if I would have spoke, I think I would have broken into tears. It just hit me after all those years that this is what was happening to me. And that feeling never came to me again, but I'll never forget it as long as I live. I would, I, I just was overwhelmed in that surreal moment that this is the guy that I shined shoes in all the bars in Harvey growing up, and he was on the jukebox singing, and now I'm sitting next to him in his private jet, and he's telling me we're going to knock him dead in Chicago.
Well, I was going to say that, like, you were working construction, and so you'd go to the bar after work even and go listen to Frank, and then being able to, you know, kind of be his right-hand comrade when you were touring and stuff, yeah, of course it was surreal.
Yeah, it was. And my buddies, when I was tending bar in Harvey, we would I'd lock the bar up around 2 o'clock, and they would hang around while I was restocking the freezer and everything. They always played Frank, and he would come on singing, you know, Come Fly With Me. And they'd say, man, can you imagine what that would be like flying with Frank? What was it, Sammy and Dean? And, you know, I'm a bartender. I'm going, yeah, wow, man, that must be cool. And here I was doing all that. Yeah, it was a wonderful, wonderful time for me.
Well, and his music, you know, you're talking about working construction. His music was kind of about the working class. It was for the working class. I mean, that's why I always felt like he was singing to, right?
No doubt in my mind. In all the years that I toured with him, he would, no matter who I brought backstage, he would meet them. He never once ever said no. I brought back nuns from my neighborhood. I brought back buddies, bartenders. I brought back Dan Rosenkowski when he was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, senators, congressmen. And he was good to all of them. But when I brought back the little guy, if you will, you know, a guy who drove a bread truck or a guy who was a bartender, and I'd introduce him, Frank would spend more time with that person. He would make that person feel comfortable, you know. I remember one time I told him about a guy who drove a bread truck, and he starts saying, now, what kind of bread did you deliver? Was it the Italian bread? And he made the guy feel so special, you know. But that was his knack for looking out for the little guy, you know. And the songs were to that lonely guy in the bar whose woman left him and he's never going to find love again, you know.
You know, I think if there's one common story I've heard from a lot of people that worked with Frank, knew Frank, that are long gone, they all said the same thing, that he just loved going and talking to people. And even if it was 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, he'd walk out there and start talking to people. And they'd be shocked that he was on the floor, but that's the type of guy he was.
By the way, that's when you say 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, he never went to bed till the sun came
right,
up in all the
exactly.
years I toured with him. And he wanted you to hang with him, yeah. and which was fun at first, but after the first 10 years. But then,
after the first 10 years.
Yeah, at the funeral, a couple of times I made him laugh so hard. One time we were doing one-nighters all over the United States, and we pulled into Las Vegas, and we're going to open at the Desert Inn and do two shows. And after the second show, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. He was going strong. We had 4 or 5 people sitting at a table on the back of a restaurant, and he was going strong. And I was beat. I got up from the table and I started to go away. He said, "Hey, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to bed." He said, "What for?" I said, "I got to get up early in the morning and go to the cemetery and visit those guys." He said, "What guys?" I said, "All those guys who died trying to stay up with you every night."
I love it.
He roared. He said, "Go to bed."
Go to bed.
Tell that story all the time.
I love it. I love it. We're talking to Tommy Dreesen. He's returned to Chicago on Saturday, August 28th at the Comedy Shrine Theater in Aurora for his one-man show, The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh. Tickets, you can go to ComedyShrine.com. And there's more after the news next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Day Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to my pal Tommy Dreesen. He's going to be back in Chicago at the Comedy Shrine Theater on Saturday, August 28th for his one-man show, The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh. Tickets can be found at ComedyShrine.com, and you can call 630-585-0300. Tommy, so, you know, your early days, we were talking about construction and all that. You were, as a teenager, you hung out with a pretty rough crowd here in Chicagoland. You called yourself the Jokers, which is ironic because you became a comedian.
You know, it's funny that you read the book.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. Yeah, we had black leather jackets, and one of the guys in the gang was a real good artist, and he painted the picture of the Joker from the Batman and Robin, you know, series. He painted that picture on the back and Jokers. I never thought I'd ever be a comedian. It was the furthest thing from my mind, you know, in those days, you know. In fact, it was the furthest thing in my mind when I came out of the service after 4 years in the service. You know, I worked construction, got married, kids started coming in. I had 3 kids. I worked on loading docks for Jones Motor. I was a teamster, and then I dropped my card and I became management. I was a foreman for a trucking firm, and then I always tended bar part-time, mm-hmm. and I did every odd job. You know, I was a private detective for a Polizzi Detective Agency for a long time, and, you know, just side jobs, never thinking I'd ever be in show business. It was, and you know the story. I was in the JCs, a civic group, mm-hmm. and in the Harvey JCs, and I wrote a drug education program teaching grade school children the ills of drug abuse with humor, a concept I had. And the guy helping me with the project had just joined the day I was proposing it. He came from Norfolk, Virginia, and graduated from Norfolk State College. and E.I. DuPont recruited him into Chicago as a marketing representative, and he wanted to work with me on it as a black guy, Tim Reed. And I said, yeah, and you know, and a lot of the program was based on making the kids laugh, and then once getting them relaxed, then we planted the seeds of the ills of drug abuse. And the program became very successful, and one day a little eighth grade girl said, you guys are funny, you ought to become a comedy team. So we became America's first black and white comedy team, and history shows now that we're also the last.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
46 years ago.
Yeah, I know that. Well, I mean, the success continued not only for you two, but then even when you went off on your own, you started working the Playboy clubs too at some point.
Yeah, well, Tim Reed and I worked the Playboy circuit for while we were on tour. You know, and when we started out, there were no comedy clubs in America. None. So, you know, we worked all black clubs in the North and the South, what they affectionately called the Chitlin Circuit, black-owned, black-operated nightclubs. And then we also worked the Playboy Circuit. And then, of course, when we got the Mr. Kelly's, that was the big time in Chicago, which is now Gibson Steakhouse. But right, right. It used to be Mr. Kelly's, where when you made it there in Chicago, you made the big time. And then when the team split up, I continued to work at Playboy Clubs and struggled. But after my first appearance on The Tonight Show, my whole life changed. I ended up doing 61 appearances on The Tonight Show, but I never stopped working from that first appearance on The Tonight Show.
No, go back to Mr. Kelly's, because there was a great documentary that was just out this year that you were a big part of. But, I mean, that place really was the who's who of Chicago. Like, I mean, I wish there was a place like that today. I'm so old school. I would love to go see some of these performers and stuff and just spend one evening there and see what it was like. But talk a little bit about Mr. Kelly's.
It was the place, you know, the two brothers that owned it were called Oscar and George Marienthal. Mm-hmm. And I caddied for them at Ravislow Country Club in Homewood when I was a little boy. When I lived in Harvey, I caddied in Homewood at Ravislow. And they had this eye and ear for talent. They would go around the country and see a singer, like a girl named Bette Midler, like a girl named Barbara Streisand. And they were making $250 a week at some little club in New York. And they said, come to Chicago, we'll triple what you make. We'll give you $750 for a week, and then we're going to bring you back later for double that triple. So you would get $1,500 the next time. So they would get this young artist to come and work 1 week in Chicago and gave them triple what they made. And then they'd hold that contract to let artists became a star. Wow. And then they'd bring him back to Mr. Kelly's for $1,500 for the whole week.
and
everybody was glad to do it, yeah. Except what Barbara Streisand was the only one. She bought out. She paid $15,000 to buy out of it. She didn't want to come back. But everybody else was grateful, you know, to come back.
Yeah, it's
Kelly's
brilliant.
That's a great comedy room and a great dinner. And by the way, the pressure opening night in the audience was the Chicago Sun-Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Daily News, the Herald American, the Chicago Today, the Daily Defender, and they all had critics, and they all wrote reviews. You know, so the pressure was enormous.
I bet it was. And again, there's so many different places and milestones in your career, Tommy. So now in L.A., you started working at the Comedy Store and made some lifelong friends. I mean, Mitzi Shore gave you that big break.
Yeah, in those days, there was only one comedy club in L.A. on Sunset Boulevard. And the excitement there every night, somebody was getting discovered every night. You know, after I did my first appearance on The Tonight Show, I was doing Dinah Shore, Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas, Johnny Carson, Midnight Special, Rock Concert, Soul Train, American Bandstand, Hollywood Squares, $20,000 Pyramid. All those shows would come and look for comedians in at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And I was working every night with all these unknown comedians, David Letterman, Jay Leno, Robin Williams, Gallagher, Michael Keaton. The girl waiting tables was Deborah Winger, you know.
Yeah, wow.
I don't know whatever happened to all them, but I'm with Dave Fire on WGN.
Right, exactly. you know, talking to us about The Tonight Show, you mentioned Johnny Carson. You did that like 61 times, I think you said. Ed McMahon gave you some great advice before you walked on stage that first time.
Yeah, and you did read that book. I'm proud of you, Dave.
we've talked about it before, yeah.
You know, I've hosted a lot of shows, and I've had, and authors would be coming on, and I did the same thing. I read the book because I wanted to be able to ask, you know,
sure,
relevant questions.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I'd been bumped three times. Every time I went to The Tonight Show, they ran out of time.
Oh, my God.
They'd put you in makeup, send you up to your dressing room, and then bring you down to the green room, and it was time to go on, and they ran out of time. That happened three times in a row. On the fourth time, I'm in makeup. Fred DeCordova, the producer, came in the green in the makeup room. He said, I got bad news for you. I said, what? He said, you're going on tonight. You know, 26 million people watched that show.
Yeah.
And one appearance on The Tonight Show, the pressure was enormous. One appearance could change your life. Freddie Prinze did one appearance, and he got a sitcom the next day.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, he was on the cover of Time magazine. That show had power in his face. So anyhow, Ed McMahon came into my dressing room just before I was going on, and he said, "Tommy, have fun, and they'll have fun. Remember that. Mm-hmm. Have fun, mm-hmm. and the audience will have fun." And I never forgot that. Every night I went on stage from that time on, just before I go out, I say to myself, "Let's go have some fun."
Yeah, I like that. I like that. But, you know, like when you walked up to that curtain, that iconic curtain, to go on, like what was going through your mind at that just that moment?
I can't tell you the enormous pressure because, again, 26 million people watched that show in those days.
Yeah.
You know, not only that, my mother had everybody back in Harvey, Illinois watching, so if I bomb, I couldn't even go back home, you know.
right.
Talent, exactly. Talent coordinators, Vegas buyers for all the major hotels, they watched that show looking for the new young talent. Singers watched that show looking for a comedian that could open for them, that could work clean. Because in those days, there was no cable television.
Yeah.
So in order to get on TV, you had to do material that could make grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, and the kids laugh, you know.
Right.
So the pressure was enormous. And you're standing behind that curtain, and you're waiting. Doc Severinsen's playing. The music's playing because you're in a commercial break. And then all of a sudden, the music stops, and your heart stops, mm-hmm. because now the lights start coming on the curtain. You know we're coming back live. And Johnny Carson says, "We're back now, and I'm glad you're in such a good mood tonight, because my next guest is making his first appearance on The Tonight Show. Will you welcome, please, Tom Dreesen?" Now, think about that. He said, "I'm glad you're in such a good mood tonight." He set that tone. This is his first time, you know. They open up that curtain, you walk out, and the bright lights hit you. You can't see the audience. They're in the shadows. All you see is that camera with the red light on it, the on camera, and you hit your mark on the floor. Whoa, and I did that first joke, and it got laughed. Then I did a second joke, and it got laughed. Then I did a third joke, I got applause.
And the confidence built, right? Yeah.
Oh, Johnny and Ed McMahon laughing behind me, and now I was on a roll. I got 8 applause. When I finished, I said, "You've been a wonderful audience. This is my first appearance on The Tonight Show, and show business is a tough life. So if you like me, just if you like me and you're Protestant, say a prayer. If you're Catholic, light a candle. If you're Jewish, somebody in your family owns a nightclub. Tell them about me."
That's awesome. That's awesome. What was the first time that he invited you over to the couch, like, or to the chair? Like, was it that first time, or was it a couple times down the road?
No, it was a third time. He usually waited like 3 times before he calls you, because he wanted to make sure that you had staying power. You know, some guys could do one Tonight Show, maybe 2 Tonight Shows, but he wanted to know that you were there for good. To America, when you did your first appearance on The Tonight Show in 1975, to America you had arrived. But to my industry, to our industry, show business, we hadn't arrived till we sat down and talked to Johnny.
No question.
So it was really important.
No question.
I used to love making him laugh. I'd tell him stories about Harvey, Illinois, and all that stuff. He was really a good sport about that.
That's awesome. And, of course, Johnny Carson can be seen every weeknight on Antenna TV. We're talking to Tommy Dreesen. He's returning to Chicago Saturday, August 28th at the Comedy Shrine Theater in Aurora for a one-man show, The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh. For tickets, you can go to ComedyShrine.com or call 630-585-0300. And there's more with Tommy next on 720 WGN.
I will show you around.
We are talking to Chicago's own Tommy Dreesen. He's returning to Chicago Saturday, August 28th at the Comedy Shrine Theater in Aurora for his one-man show, The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh. Tickets can be found at ComedyShrine.com. Tom, you've noted that, like, Mitzi Shore gave you the big break at the Comedy Store. Carson gave you the huge break on The Tonight Show. But it was Sammy Davis Jr. that gave you a boost as a national touring act.
Yeah, he had a show called Sammy and Company. And I always wanted to do his show because I saw him in Chicago at the Black Expo one year when Tim Reed and I were a comedy team. And it was just amazing to watch him perform live. And I wanted to do his TV show, and I ended up getting on at Sammy and Company. And I did a strong 6 minutes about growing up in Harvey and playing basketball on an all-black basketball team. And he just fell off the couch laughing, and he said, "I'm going to take you on the road with me." And he did for 3 years. I had never worked Las Vegas, but my first time in Las Vegas was opening for Sammy Davis at Caesar's Palace. We became such great friends for the years that I knew him. And even after I quit touring with him and I was touring with Frank, we would get together a lot, Sammy and I. And he loved Frank Sinatra. He just thought the sun rose and set on Frank, you know.
Well, I mean, speaking of Frank now, you toured obviously with him for years, but, you know, it's something you never took for granted. But you were in Vegas and you went to see Sinatra at Harrah's. So how did that connection with Frank actually begin?
Actually, that I was in Lake Tahoe. I was touring with Smokey Robinson at the time, and I was at Caesars in Lake Tahoe, and Frank was appearing at Harrah's next door in Lake Tahoe. There's a casino between Harrah's and Caesars. But I after my show one night, I was there 7 nights. I could have went on any night. And for some reason, I chose this week night. I said, I think I'll go see Frank tonight, because I had seen him in Chicago, and I was just a big fan, as you know, as a kid. Sure. So I rushed off stage that night after I opened for Smokey, and I didn't even change out of my stage clothes. And I went over to Harrah's Casino, and I was running into the showroom. They had a place for me. The maitre d' set it up for me, and the vice president of Harrah's Hotel, a man named Holmes Hendrickson, saw me, and he called me over. He was talking to a big heavyset guy with a cigar. And he said, Tommy, come here. And I went over, and he said, Tommy, this is Mickey Rudin. Well, I recognized the name. That was Frank Sinatra's lawyer. Mm. He said, Mickey, this is Tom Dreesen, and I think Tom would make a great opening act for Frank Sinatra. And the lawyer got a pained expression on his face, like he heard that a million times. And he winked at the vice president, but I caught the wink. And he looked at me and he said, hey, kid, if I gave you a week with Frank, would you want more than $50,000?
Oh,
I said, Mr. Rudin, put it this way. If you gave me a week with Frank, would you want more than $50,000?
Oh, that's awesome.
He said, oh, I like this kid. I like this kid. He started laughing. And they called me a week later to do 1 week with Frank Sinatra at the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City. And I was with him 2 nights. On the second night, he and his wife, Barbara, took me out to dinner. And I can remember like it was yesterday. He set his knife and his fork down. In the middle of the meal, I was sitting across from him. He said, I like your material, and I like your style. I'd like you to do a few other dates with me if you're interested. And I didn't say, let me check my calendar. I said, yeah, of course. And that turned into 14 years, 45, 50 cities a year, staying in his home 6 times a year, riding around the desert with him until the sun came up, you know, time after time. It was a wonderful. In the beginning, he was the boss of the tour. And later, he became like a buddy. And toward the end of my life, of his life, he became like a father to me. And it's a friendship that I miss him every day. I really do.
You know, and when you think about that, I can't imagine like being such a lifelong fan and seeing your name on a marquee with Frank's. I mean, it just must have been surreal.
It really was. And you know, again, for years I did a lot of television. I did about 500 appearances on national television, but I never cared if ABC, NBC, CBS. If any of them liked me, it wasn't a big deal for me, but because I'm a live performer, I love stand-up comedy. I've been a stand-up comedian for 51 years. I love going out and making an audience laugh. At Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., and Dean Martin, I worked with Dean to it, and I also did the Dean Martin roast and did shows with Dean. If those three thought that I was good enough to grace the same stage as them, you could close the lid on my coffin on me, because that's
awesome.
For a little kid from Harvey, Illinois, that was, to me, the epitome of live performance is being with those three guys at different times. You know?
Well, I'll tell you, Tommy, you can hear so many of these great stories when he comes back to town in Chicago on Saturday, August 28th at the Comedy Shrine Theater in Aurora for his one-man show, The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh. Get tickets at comedyshrine.com, or you can call 630-585-0300. You could also pick up a copy of his memoir, Still Standing, His Journey from Streets and Saloons to the Stage and Sinatra. And for more on Tommy, you can visit tomatreason.com. What a great way to spend a Friday night with you, Tommy.
Always great to be with you too, Dave, and I can hardly wait till I come to Chicago and you can pick up the check at Gibson's.
I will do that. I will do that. Let's go to dinner after the show, right? Sounds great, buddy. Take care.
Okay, you too, Dave.
Talk soon. All right, thanks, Tommy. All right, top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom are next on 720 WGN.